Joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline as the Browns get set to take on the Broncos this Saturday night, tomorrow night, primetime action from Denver. Troy Rank is with us, a Broncos insider from Denver 7. He's been covering the Broncos for a while, and he's with us now. Troy, how you doing? Thanks for joining me.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show.
Troy, you know, last week, obviously the Broncos had been playing some really good football until last week, and obviously, you know, last week they fell on their face. And I've asked a couple people this week, and I'm curious what you have to say as someone who's with the team all the time. Is it too simple to just point to, well, Emmanuel Sanders got hurt, and they already traded Demaryius Thomas, so that's what happened? Or were there bigger issues last week than just that?
Well, they missed Emmanuel Sanders on offense. They missed Chris Harris probably even more on defense. They're all-pro cornerback. And they basically had just three collapses against George Kittle in the passing game. Yeah. He had 179 yards on three catches, 210 yards at halftime, when they knew going in he was the one guy they had to stop. So it'd be like, you know, if you're playing the Lakers with LeBron and you just forget to guard him on the three most important possessions. And so it was to be down 20-0 and have 65 yards of offense at halftime against San Francisco was disappointing. They played well and they competed in the second half. I mean, the defense only gave up 78 yards in the entire second half, but by that time it was too late. And offensively, yeah, they've become so conservative, they're so afraid to turn the ball over, that it's prevented them from scoring. So now they feel like they have to win out, but the realism that their playoff hopes have dimmed has kind of set in. So it'll be interesting to see how they get after it. Because they're at home, I think they will.
You know, my partner and I were both big proponents of the Browns drafting Bradley Chubb at 4. Now, the Browns went another way and drafted Denzel Ward, and he's been great, so nobody's regretting it, but obviously Bradley Chubb's been great as well. You know, we're not watching the Broncos play, though, every week. The numbers look fantastic. Has he been as good as his numbers? Better? Is the numbers overrating him a little bit? How good has Bradley Chubb been?
Yeah, he's a force. He's better than even I expected. I thought he would get to 10 sacks playing on the opposite side of Von Miller, you know, where you always have to know where Von is on the field. Bradley Chubb, the thing that's impressed me most, he's bigger than I thought. I mean, he's more similar to Myles Garrett in body type than he is Von. I mean, he's every bit of right at 270, but agile enough to, you know, reasons that still shock me. They drop him into coverage, but he's athletic, 270, can stop the run, and he plays with a great motor. And that's the part I didn't, you know, I watched a handful of his games at NC State, and he dominated guys at times. The thing that Bradley Chubb brings is that he's human Red Bull. He caffeinates that defense at times, just like Philip Lindsay does on offense. And that's the part I didn't know until I saw him, that, man, does he play with a motor. And he, you know, it's funny because here in Denver, a lot of people wanted them to draft Baker Mayfield and or a quarterback.
Right.
And it still may haunt them. You know, Keenum's just been okay. But you can't dislike the Bradley Chubb pick. He's their next version of Von Miller, frankly.
Yeah, obviously, right now, I'm sure the Broncos would love to have Baker Mayfield. They didn't have a choice, obviously, you know, with him going number one overall. As you talk to the Broncos this week, what have they said, the defenders, what have they had to say about, you know, watching Baker Mayfield on film?
Yeah, everything that, you know, that the narrative is that you hear nationally applies to this game. A lot of defenders, they love the confidence he plays with swag, plays with energy, guys gravitate to him. But the things they talk about in terms of defending him is he's really accurate, he's accurate on the run, and he's not as easy to bring down as I think people thought he would be in terms of sacking him. Obviously, the change in coach from Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley has done wonders for Mayfield, and anyone who watched Hard Knocks knew that he didn't like Hugh Jackson. I mean,
sure,
he had no respect for him. When he went up to him in that one episode, he's like, I want you to know you've really earned being the backup. I thought Mayfield was going to punch him in the face. And I was just like, and he had 20 sacks. Like, I just, again, the program still to this day, just, it's hard to believe they just don't go to a guy's strengths. But defenders like him. I mean, they just like the edge he plays with. The Broncos play a guy like him twice a year in Phillip Rivers, who never stops talking.
Right.
He doesn't curse, but he never stops talking. He's in your face. He drives you batty, but you respect him. And that's what they see in Baker. There's a lot of respect, especially the way he's played these last five games. I mean, he's getting after it. 114 quarterback rating. He's not getting sacked anymore. So they know the challenge is real to beat this Cleveland team.
We're talking with Troy Rank, Broncos insider, Denver 7, is with us. You talked about the offense being conservative. Obviously, part of that is Case Keenum's just not that good a quarterback. And, you know, Lindsey's obviously been great. as a running back, an undrafted running back. I'm sure that's been part of it as well. What? Give me some thoughts on him. And also, would you say it's a no-brainer the Broncos are going to draft a quarterback in the first round this year or 2019?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to stick with Case Keenum for one more year. He doesn't make mistakes, but in the process, he's not making any plays.
Right.
Over his last six games, he gets 7 touchdowns, 1 pick. But it's so conservative, it leaves the defense for no margin for error. And last week, they punted on their first 6 drives. I mean, yeah, you're not turning the ball over, but you're not doing anything.
Right.
You're not getting first downs. You're not on the field. But Keenum has been a leader the way they wanted. He's respected, worth everything you wanted in a quarterback. He's done it. But essentially, he's Trevor Siemian from 2 years ago when they went 9-7 and Siemian had 18 touchdowns and 10 picks. That's who Keenum is. And it's okay, but that's not what you thought you were getting, a bump. A 28 touchdowns, 12 picks, like that guy. And he hasn't been that. Philip Lindsay, the undrafted rookie, is having one of the greatest running back seasons by an undrafted player ever, frankly. He's going to should go over 1,000 yards this week. First guy since LeGarrette Blount in 2010. He's got a chance to set the all-time record for rushing yards by an undrafted free agent that Dominic Rhodes had from the Colts. I mean, he has been their offense, their best offensive player. Problem was, you saw last week when they take him away, as San Francisco did, and I'm sure Cleveland will attempt to and load the box, can Keenum make enough plays? And they're a little hamstrung because they're so young at wide receiver, but they've given Keenum license to just say, hey, make mistakes, it's fine, because we can't win the other way. They basically, Vance Joseph and Bill Musgrave and teammates are like, take chances. We can't win with you just being captain check down and holding on to the ball. But in terms of taking a quarterback in the first round, this isn't the draft for them to do that. My guess is they're going to go D-line or cornerback, maybe cornerback. Right now, as we sit here, cornerback's more of a priority because Bradley Roby, kid from Ohio State, likely won't be back. So they're going to have to probably draft a starting corner in the first round as we sit here today.
You know, every time a team plays in Denver, people always talk about the elevation and the players have to get used to it. Is that overblown? Is it as big a deal as it always gets brought up to be?
Well, it's an issue. I mean, I've grown up here and lived almost my entire life. It's not just psychological. There's a physical element to it. Like you get off a plane and, run to baggage claim for some reason, you'll feel it. If you climb stairs, you feel it. But it is a little bit over-exaggerated because Denver's at 5,200 feet. Vail and Aspen and the ski resorts that people associate with Colorado, that's 10,000, 11,000 feet. That's a different climate and a different altitude. But it can play a factor if the game is at pace. Like when Peyton Manning was running the high-octane offense, defenses were gassed in the fourth quarter. But the place they play out now, it doesn't necessarily have the impact that it did when Manning was running that offense where they were scoring 40 points a game.
We're talking with Troy Rank, Broncos. He's been on the Broncos beat with Denver 7. Troy, I know you said before that you think they'll bounce back at home. Obviously, their record's 3-3 at home, not as good as you would expect, but obviously they're not a great team. They're an okay team. Tell us why you think the Broncos will pull this one out in what should be a close game.
Well, I do expect a close game. Remember their losses to the Rams, Texans, and Chiefs all at the time were like the three hottest teams in the league. So I'm not making excuses, but they kind of caught a weird break in their scheduling where they weren't playing particularly well and they were playing like the three hottest teams in a row. They did beat the Steelers at home. I see it being that kind of game where they're going to give up yards. Their defense is only averaging allowing like 18 points a game the last 4 games. They're 3-1, so that's how they're going to win: is run the ball, control the clock, limit possessions, and try to win ugly. And when the one advantage they do have at home, when you ask why at home, their pass rush is even more effective. I think they're 4th in the league in sacks, 25.5 from Chubb and Miller, the most of any duo. But the crowd gets loud, and they can jump counts. It's hard to hard count them like Vaughn. Can't really hard count him on the road because the crowd's so crazy. So they really become anticipatory on the snap count. And that, but the key, all this goes back to them having a lead. They scored 3 points in the last four first quarters. So if they get a lead, they're going to win. If they don't and they're playing from behind, then they won't because they're not good enough to, they haven't shown they're good enough to overcome that. But the reason I think they win at home is they win ugly like they did against the Steelers, 23-20 game.
Is it going to be a crazy atmosphere, night game Saturday? Browns fans travel, so there'll probably be some presence there. What kind of crowd, what kind of energy do you expect tomorrow night?
Well, it will be initially, but the key is they have to be good early. Because this crowd, that they're kind of over. This could be the third straight year they missed the playoffs. This isn't the 2015 with the Patriots in prime time where the crowd's just maniacal. The crowd, at like the Steelers game, for instance, the crowd became more and more of a factor as they felt like they were going to win. I mean, this is a remember, this team hasn't had back-to-back losing seasons since 1972.
Wow.
They're spoiled here.
Yeah.
So they're not used to losing. So if they get behind 14-0, 14-3 at half, the crowd won't be a factor. But if they're leading 14-3 or 17-10, the crowd will be an enormous factor.
Troy, last thing, you know, for the older Browns fan, I'd say fans that are probably 40 and older, they still hate the Broncos, right? Like they, because of Elway and AFC Championship games. There's a lot of bitterness, and Browns fans that are 40 and older, certainly 45 and older, you know, the Broncos are one of the team, you know, not as much as the Steelers and the Ravens, but they hate the Broncos, and they feel like it's a rivalry. Is there, you know, obviously the Broncos came on the positive side of that, so obviously there's different feelings, but do Broncos fans, like, kind of think about that, consider the Browns at all like a rival, or is it too many years now even for the older fans?
Yeah, it's just too many years. The Patriots have replaced them as a rival. Obviously, the division rival now is the Chiefs, then by, I mean, you could probably pick between Raiders and Chargers, but more, it was Raiders, then Chiefs. But the Patriots became their rival for the better part of 7-8 years, and now they're not playing each other every year now. But I grew up in the 80s, you know, watching John Elway, and anyone who's a Bronco fan and or a sports fan knows about the drive, knows about the Viner fumble. Knows, I mean, those games are iconic moments in Broncos history, but for the fans, they just the Browns have been so off the radar for so long, it just they don't really attach it to that. But obviously, I'm sure you'll see NBC and the broadcast team will be rolling that out there. You know, those are some bad memories. I feel for Browns fans.
Yeah.
You know, as bad as the drive was, they should have won the one in Denver.
Yep.
That was even more remarkable than that fumble. I mean, that was like as bizarre a loss for the Browns as you could have, because the one before, I mean, there was some weird stuff that happened, but Elway had the drive. The other one, that fumble, oh my God, that just is a cheese grater to the shins if you're a Browns fan.
No doubt. Troy, appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining me.
You got it. Anytime. Take care.